from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Another day in California, another mass shooting. At 10:30, we'll get an update on yesterday's shooting at a party in Fresno, which comes on the heels of incidents in Santa Clarita and Orinda, and we'll talk to a sociologist who studies mass shootings. But first, the public phase of the House impeachment inquiry continues tomorrow, and we'll preview the proceedings with NPR's Ron Elving and recap last week's testimony. It's all next after this news. Welcome to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. Public testimony resumes tomorrow in the House of Representatives in the impeachment inquiry as Democratic lawmakers seek to build their case that President Trump illegally withheld information and withheld military aid also to Ukraine in exchange for promises it would investigate his political rivals. Alexander Vindman, who is the National Security Council's top Ukraine specialist, will be tomorrow's first witness, followed by Jennifer Williams, a Foreign Service aide to Vice President Pence. Both officials listened in to the July 25th phone call between President Trump and Ukraine President Zelensky. We're going to talk about what to expect this week, and we're going to review the testimony so far with NPR's Ron Elving, who is senior editor and correspondent on the Washington desk. And welcome, Ron.
Good to be with you, Michael.
Great to have you with us. I want to talk about impeachment, and there are things happening as we're speaking here, and lots is changing and going in flux. I have to ask a question of you first, though, because in the bottom half of this hour, we're going to be talking about gun violence again. There's been tragedies here in California recently, in Santa Clarita and Orinda, as well as most recently in Fresno. And the president has put out some statements recently about how sort of intimating Congress has to do its job. They're instead having this witch hunt and so forth. One help can't help thinking about all those bills that are on Mitch McConnell's desk.
There is no question that the House has passed a lot of legislation that the Senate has simply ignored. This is by design. Mitch McConnell is well aware of everything that the House has done with respect to guns, with respect to campaign reform, and that is election reform, really. I mean, we're talking about getting people in and out of the polling place quicker and making it safer and more secure to vote, things of that nature, making Election Day a holiday, maybe moving it to another day. All of those things have been ignored by the Senate. Mitch McConnell has said that those are all power grabs by the Democrats or attempts to take away people's Second Amendment rights, and they won't be considered by the Senate. So there is that. Obviously, impeachment is something of a distraction to the House, but they're moving forward on a number of things. They're just not moving forward on the things that the president would like to have them move forward on.
Well, we're moving forward into a week which will feature eight witnesses giving testimony, and it seems to be some things that are happening now that really bring to our attention some changes. And I'm talking specifically, of course, about now the use of the word bribery, which has not been used before. It was all quid pro quo. But also, the House of Representatives is now actually investigating, just announced today, whether President Trump actually lied to Special Counsel Mueller in written answers that he provided to the Russian investigation. And that's according to the general counsel filed in federal court today. So we're seeing some things taking place here that suggest different tactics, are we not?
We are seeing some redefinition of exactly what the charges or eventually articles of impeachment might entail.
Yeah.
Now, that term quid pro quo, that got a lot of attention. That was never really the Democrats' term. That was more the president's term, in the same way that the president liked to talk about the whole Mueller investigation as being an investigation into collusion. Actually, Robert Mueller was at some pains to say, I am not investigating collusion. That is not a crime. That is not a word that is of interest to me. I'm looking for a particular kind of criminal conspiracy. But the president liked collusion, and he liked to say no collusion, and he said it a lot. And he, more or less, got that point across with big assist from Attorney General William Barr to the general public as an impression of what Mueller came up with. He's coming up with no collusion, therefore I'm totally exonerated, which was a pretty much total mischaracterization of Mueller's report. And now that we're getting more evidence in about what we can know from some of these other depositions and people who are coming forward under oath to talk about some of the things that happened over the past 6 months or a year, we're getting more reason to think the president was not forthcoming with Mueller and his written answers to questions.
Since you mentioned the name of the attorney general, who many people feel was involved in nothing short of another kind of cover-up or short-circuiting what the Mueller investigation did, I'm wondering what your reaction is to the speech that he gave in front of the Federalist Society, where essentially he said this inquiry is illegitimate and it's undermining the rule of law.
Yes, he was quite strong in that speech. It was a remarkable speech for an attorney general in any time. But he clearly felt, I think, internal and external pressure to come out very strong against this investigation and to make it clear that he is taking no part in it and that he does not believe that it is legitimate. And, of course, as the attorney general of the United States, his word has some weight. So if he were to show any kind of doubt about that, and given the attitude that he has shown toward the president up to now, that would be taken as tremendously corroborative evidence suggesting that Barr himself saw something terribly wrong. So he had to come out on Friday night before this conservative lawyers organization, the Federalist Society, the people who have been choosing judges for Republicans to nominate to federal court jobs all the way up to the Supreme Court for a number of years now. It was a gangbuster speech. It was a barn burner, and it was received as such, and really quite vituperative in many cases, and saying that the rule of law was being undermined by the left and that the norms of behavior in Washington were being defied and ruined, not by President Trump, but by the left.
Actually, I saw the word rant a lot as far as characterizing the speech and some of the characterizations of it. We're talking again with Ron Elving, senior editor and correspondent on the Washington desk for NPR News. So let's just take a quick look back and then forward. We had Marie Yovanovitch testifying last week. There was a lot of deference paid to her, I felt, and I don't know if you saw it that way, but certainly many did. And when she left, they were applauding and giving her an ovation and so forth. And there was clearly a kind of tactic in doing that, it would seem to me. I'll use that word again, because in this case, it definitely seemed to be a tactic. But the President of the United States, as he often does, tweeted and probably undermined some of what the Republicans were trying to show in the way of courtesy.
Tremendous frustration on the part of the Republicans on that committee. They thought they had a pretty good strategy for Friday's proceedings. They wanted to tamp everything down and say, look, this is a lovely person. She's been a fine ambassador, perhaps. She lost the confidence of the president. He has a total right to replace any ambassador he wishes. And so we're not even sure why you're here. And at one point, Devin Nunes, the ranking member on the committee, said, this person is not a material fact witness to anything. We're not sure why she's here. Well, of course, they knew why she was there, but they were acting as though there was no purpose in her appearing. But that was utterly undercut seconds later when the president put out a tweet, which immediately the Democrats put up on a screen above the hearing as if to say, folks, this is what we're dealing with. And he said she was a never-Trumper and went after her and said every place that she went while she was an ambassador, places like Kyrgyzstan and Somalia, everything went bad after she got there. Well, of course, there's no basis of fact for any of the things that he was saying. And yet, you know, this person who first went to the ambassador level under Republican presidents and served, you know, Ronald Reagan and George W. Bush and so forth, you know, was suddenly being pilloried as some kind of you know, traveling typhoid Mary, if you will.
Blaming her
as
for Mogadishu. I mean, it doesn't quite fit the timeline.
Which, many years before she was there. At any rate, it was almost an absurdity to some degree, and yet it was terribly embarrassing to the Republicans, who were trying to act as though she was an inconsequential witness who could be more or less ignored. Instead, she became a sudden star. And as you say, as she left, she was applauded by the members of the public who were in the audience. And this is a randomly selected group of people who have stood in line for hours and hours to get in. And they haven't applauded any other witnesses. And it just, there was a sense that she had stuck to her guns, been a brave face and a new face to the entire investigation, and brought it a human dimension it hadn't had before.
I thought I saw Republicans applauding her, too. Is that an hallucination?
There may have been some. I personally did not see that. I wouldn't rule it out, because obviously if other people are applauding and you don't, that looks bad.
And now we have the president going after Jennifer Williams, who will be testifying of the State Department and actually an aide to Vice President Pence, testifying really along the lines that this case is being built methodically. She actually heard that phone call to Zelensky. Huh?
Yes, indeed. And she will be testifying tomorrow, 9 o'clock Eastern time. And this is a person who works for Mike Pence. She is a special advisor for Europe and Russia in the office of the vice president. She is his expert on this part of the world. And he has been rather involved in this because the president has sent him out as a surrogate to meet with Ukrainian President Zelensky in Warsaw when the president decided not to go himself. And so this is a key and pivotal position that she occupies. And like the other witnesses, she is corroborating the basic facts of what went on, the shadow diplomacy, the Rudy Giuliani, the president's personal attorney, and some of his associates, bad-mouthing Marie Yovanovitch and bad-mouthing the other American diplomats in Ukraine, and insisting that in order to get this aid to flow, the Ukrainian officials needed to be a little more cooperative with this other group of non-diplomats who nonetheless thought they could represent President Trump and seem to have been doing so.
Talking again with Ron Elving, and you can talk with him and talk with us, and we do welcome your involvement in the program. You can give us a call right now. Our toll-free number is available to you. The number to call is 866-733-6786. Please feel free to join the program. The number once more, 866-733-6786. You can also get in touch with us on Twitter and Facebook. We're at KQED Forum, or email any questions or comments you might have to forum@kqed.org or post them at kqed.org/forum. And please be part of the program. I'm wondering why Bolton hasn't been subpoenaed. I mean, I know that he would probably ignore it maybe, but it seems to me that Congress – I think I have this right, don't I, Ron? At this point, there's no subpoena or court order from the Democrats in the House of Representatives for John Bolton when he's at the center of so much of this.
You're right, but there is every reason to expect that at some point or another, his testimony would be more than welcome. The reason there's no subpoena is because his deputy, Charles Kupperman, had already been subpoenaed and gone to court saying, give me a judge to tell me whether I listen to my boss, the president, who tells me I must not testify, or I listen to the Congress, which appropriates the money that pays my salary and says that I must. Which do I obey? And he had gone to get a court to give him some sort of a judgment on that. And of course, the courts don't operate that way. You don't just, you know, knock on the door and say, hey, please give me a decision. They take some time. They have some hearings. They take some briefs from everybody's lawyer. It could be weeks. It could be months. And if you're going to wait to have this proceeding that's going on right now until everybody's been satisfied in a court of law, that could take weeks or months, and we may be well into 2020, and they simply didn't want to wait. So John Bolton tried to sign on to that same sort of approach. And at that point, the House Democrats running this committee process, the House Intelligence Committee, just said, look, if we're going to have to play rope-a-dope with you guys and wait for weeks and months for you to testify, we're just going to withdraw the subpoena and go ahead.
And the president said that maybe he's considering testifying?
Well, that would certainly be it. That would be a day we'd all get up early. Let me just say, I do not believe it is likely that the president will testify in live hearings on television under oath. The president never sat down with Robert Mueller. He answered some written questions under oath, but he never sat down with Robert Mueller to be submitted to cross-examination. Those with long memories will remember that Bill Clinton sat down with a grand jury under oath, and that's when he committed perjury that got him impeached.
President loves cameras, though, and he loves, you know, to be part of, well, anything that can allow him, I suppose, to hold forth. There is that element here, I think, even though probably all of his lawyers are saying no under no circumstances. I wonder if he was just teasing that or saying something that really is coming out of both sides of his mouth. How do you read it?
It would make sense for him to say, oh, I'd love to testify and straighten everybody else out, but it has to be under the kind of rubric, the kind of rules, the kind of procedures that I would approve, and I would have to be treated fairly. That's a word he likes to use a lot. And he would say, you show me how I'm going to testify, and then I'll agree or not agree. Well, I doubt very much that they would be willing to treat him that much differently from anyone else, but even if they were, he might decide that it was not fair enough, and he didn't like the rules, and he decided not to play. But I think it's an interesting possibility. I certainly wouldn't want to foreclose it. I wouldn't think Nancy Pelosi would foreclose it. If he wants to testify, let's have him come.
She invited him. She said he's invited.
You bet.
You bet.
And let's have him come and be cross-examined. Of course, yes, he would have to be cross-examined.
And here is Nadine. Nadine, you're on the air. Good morning.
Hi, good morning. You know, my question is just on the topic you're talking about. I saw a news alert come in earlier that said something about that the House is looking at the Trump's answers to that he had lied, what he had submitted previously. I guess my question is, are there any consequences to Trump actually lying in his written answers? We've never seen any consequences before. But yeah, I'm curious as to what you guys think.
Well, here we go. We're going back to that opinion of the Office of Legal Counsel in the Department of Justice again. And William Barr cited this many times, saying that there was simply no way for a president to be indicted by a special counselor for a crime while he's president, that you just can't do that.
Even if he intimidates a witness, as Adam Schiff said he did with the ambassador?
That the remedy lies elsewhere, as they say. Well, the remedy in this case would be to remove him from office and then charge him with a crime. So now that's an awfully broad grant of power to say you can do anything you want as long as you're president and you have to be impeached and removed by 2/3 of the Senate, which happens to be controlled by your own party in an election year, before we can get at you with criminal charges, no matter what the evidence is. And in fact, the president's lawyers went before an appeals court in New York a couple, 3 weeks ago, maybe a month ago. And when the judge asked, does this mean the president could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and we could not bring him before the court of law for that act? The lawyer for the president said, yes, Your Honor, that's what it means.
Let me thank the caller. Go to another caller in just a moment. But I want you to comment, if you would, Ron, on Friday's closed-door testimony from State Department aide David Holmes, who actually overheard the phone call again between President Trump and EU Ambassador Gordon Sondland, in which Sondland assured the president that Zelensky would, quote, do anything you ask him to.
Yes, he had all kinds of colorful language for describing how willing Zelensky would be to do anything the president asked him to. And he was talking to the president at a dinner table with David Holmes, who was a member of the staff for the American embassy, the U.S. embassy in Ukraine, worked for William Taylor, the ambassador there, who had testified a couple of days earlier. And he calls the president. He gets on the phone with the president, at any rate, with David Holmes there and a couple of other witnesses, and holds the phone out from his ear because apparently the president was shouting and yelling, and everyone could hear him saying that he wanted to get these investigations done and that that was what was on his mind, after which Sondland reportedly said, the president doesn't care about Ukraine. He doesn't care about what's happening on its border with Russia and the incursions of the Russians there. What the president cares about is the investigation of the Bidens.
And let me bring another caller aboard here. We go next to Mike in Palo Alto. Mike, join us. Welcome.
Hi. So many Republicans are complaining that there aren't firsthand witnesses to some of these situations, and yet the president himself is preventing those very same witnesses from appearing. Are the Republicans making the case for obstruction of justice?
There has been a great deal of behavior from the president, including that tweet on Friday, just as Ambassador Yovanovitch began to speak, that could be seen as either messing with a witness, intimidating a witness, in some sense or another tampering with a witness, which is, of course, a serious crime if a person can be charged with a crime. And in this particular instance, we are going to hear this week from several people who were on the telephone call, who heard it, who didn't read the summary that the White House put out later after the whistleblower's complaint had become public, who actually were on the call, and who conceivably may have been among the people who had expressed concern about that phone call before it became public and led to the conclusions that the whistleblower, a person in the intelligence community, apparently somebody in the CIA, had when that person put together the whistleblower complaint that went to the Inspector General for the intelligence community and eventually up the line till it reached Congress and brought all this about.
What do you make of the statements that came from Ron Johnson, senator from Wisconsin, who said that it was a bad precedent that the whistleblower leaked the transcripts and that the whistleblower exposed things that didn't need to be exposed? I mean, that was essentially the pith of what he said.
Yes, it would have been better if all this had remained behind closed doors, I believe, the gist of his remarks.
Is that going to be attacked now, you think?
Well, I think the senator is going to have to answer for that among those people who think that there should not be a shadow American foreign policy conducted by shadow agents of the president who contradict the actual appointees of the president, who are following the policy that has been set by the president and Congress and trying to carry out the national security aid, the military aid that is necessary there for Ukraine to survive against the pressure they're getting from the Russians. And it isn't just the money. It's also the symbolism, the emblem of American support that money represents. Without that, Ukraine is essentially well, at the mercy of the Russians on their frontier, at their doorstep.
Again, our guest is Ron Elving. He is senior editor and correspondent on the Washington desk with NPR News. And a listener wants to know about Roger Stone and what was essentially the crimes that he was convicted of and that he's going to jail for. I'm interested in adding something to that listener's question for you, Ron, and that is, what kind of effect does this have on particularly those like Pompeo and others who are refusing to testify or at least are not listening to or heeding the call of the Congress here? I mean, it does come at a key time for many people who are testifying and many people who are refusing to testify.
You know, many people have forgotten about Michael Cohen, who used to be the president's personal attorney and who is now sitting in jail because of the lies that he told on behalf of his boss. There's that particular individual. There's also Paul Manafort, who got into trouble for some of his activities in Ukraine in support of the Russian supportive political wing in Ukraine. He was working for some of the people there that were friendly to the Russians. And he's sitting in jail because of some of the things that he did in association with all of the activities that this has engendered. So it's a connected case. And now you have Roger Stone, who has connections with Donald Trump going back decades and decades and helped in the 2016 campaign and may have been something of a linkage to the WikiLeaks damage that was done to the Democrats. All of that, he's now charged with witness tampering and obstruction of justice and lying to Congress. There has to be a chilling effect on anyone else who's being called to testify before Congress. And this would apply to, for example, Ambassador Sondland, who's going to be testifying on Wednesday morning and appears to be the pivotal witness in this whole proceeding.
And it was once actually changed his version of what happened. He's given a different narrative.
Already once, and now may need to again because of some subsequent testimony that's come out, to the point where you have to start wondering, if you're his lawyer, what are you going to urge him to do? I mean, are you going to take the Fifth Amendment? Yeah. Are you going to say, I don't want to talk any further because I might incriminate myself further? What would you say to someone who is being asked, in essence, to trim their story to fit that of the president when you see what's happening to these other longtime associates of the president who are now either in prison or on their way there?
What do you think? I mean, it seems unlikely that Sondland would take the Fifth only because it would kind of imply that he had things to hide, don't you think?
Well, it always does if you take the Fifth. But on the other hand, if your option is to testify to things that would clearly get you in some sort of trouble, the Constitution said maybe we should give people this other option. You can't be compelled to testify against yourself. And if Sondland gets up on Wednesday morning and says, I got to be done with you guys because this is getting me in too much hot water, that would be a way for him to go, but I'm not predicting it. I think he will take another tack.
Any predictions from you?
Nope. I can't tell you what he's going to say, but I am as interested as anyone, and I think everyone is terribly interested in what we're going to hear from Ambassador Sondland.
Well, we always learn a great deal from you and appreciate so much your being with us. Ron, thank you.
Glad to be with you, Michael.
Ron Elving again, senior editor and correspondent on the Washington desk for NPR News. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, we're going to talk about these tragic shootings that have taken place here in California and more. I'm going to talk to a sociologist who's actually done a big study about mass shootings. That's up ahead. Stay tuned.